Early in 1953, the new president turned to his friend and fellow member of the Council on Foreign Relations, Nelson Rockefeller. Eisenhower and Rockefeller began planning the secret structure of alien task supervision, which was to become a reality within 1 year. The idea for MJ-12 was thus born. It was Nelson's uncle, Winthrop Aldrich, who had been crucial in convincing Eisenhower to run for president. The whole Rockefeller family, and with them, the Rockefeller Empire, had solidly backed Ike. Eisenhower belonged heart and soul to the Council on Foreign Relations and the Rockefeller family. Asking Rockefeller for help with the alien problem was to be the biggest mistake Eisenhower ever made for the future of the United States and maybe for humanity. Within 1 week of Eisenhower's election, he had appointed Nelson Rockefeller chairman of a presidential advisory committee on government organization. Rockefeller was responsible for planning the reorganization of the government, something he had dreamed of for many years. New Deal programs went into one single cabinet position called the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. When the Congress approved the new cabinet position in April 1953, Nelson was named to the post of Undersecretary to Ovita Culp Hobby. In 1953, astronomers discovered large objects in space which were tracked moving toward the Earth. It was first believed that they were asteroids. Later evidence proved that the objects could only be spaceships. Project Sigma intercepted alien radio communications. When the objects reached the Earth, they took up a very high geosynchronous orbit around the equator. There were several huge ships, and their actual intent was unknown. Project Sigma and a new project, Plato, through radio communications using the computer binary language, were able to arrange a landing that resulted in face-to-face contact with alien beings from another planet. This landing took place in the desert. The movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind is a fictionalized version of the actual events. Project Plato was tasked with establishing diplomatic relations with this race of space aliens. A hostage was left with us as a pledge that they would return and formalize a treaty. In the meantime, a race of humanoid aliens landed at Homestead Air Force Base in Florida and successfully communicated with the United States government. This group warned us against the race orbiting the equator and offered to help us with our spiritual development. They demanded that we dismantle and destroy our nuclear weapons as the major condition. They refused to exchange technology, citing that we were spiritually unable to handle the technology we already possessed. These overtures were rejected on the grounds that it would be foolish to disarm in the face of such an uncertain future. There was no track record to read from. It may have been an unfortunate decision. A third landing at Muroc, now Edwards Air Force Base, took place in 1954. The base was closed for 3 days, and no one was allowed to enter or leave during that time. The historical event had been planned in advance. Details of a treaty had been agreed upon. Eisenhower arranged to be in Palm Springs on vacation. On the appointed day, the president was spirited to the base. The excuse was given to the press that he was visiting a dentist. Witnesses to the event have stated that 3 UFOs flew over the base and then landed. Anti-aircraft batteries were undergoing live fire training, and the startled personnel actually fired at the crafts as they passed overhead. Luckily, the shells missed, and no one was injured. President Eisenhower met with the aliens on February the 20th, 1954, and a formal treaty between the alien nation and the United States of America was signed. We then received our first alien ambassador from outer space. He was the hostage that had been left at the first landing in the desert. His name and title was His Omnipotent Highness Krill. In the American tradition of disdain for royal titles, he was secretly called Original Hostage Krill. Shortly after this meeting, President Eisenhower suffered a heart attack. Four others present at the meeting were Franklin Allen of the Hearst Newspapers, Edwin Norse of Brookings Institute, Gerald Light of metaphysical research fame, and Catholic Bishop McIntyre of Los Angeles. Their reaction was judged as the microcosm of what the public reaction might be. Based upon this reaction, it was decided that the public could not be told. Later studies confirmed the decision as sound. An emotionally revealing letter written by Gerald Light spells it out in chilling detail. It reads, "My dear friend, I have just returned from Muroc. The report is true, devastatingly true. I made the journey in company with Franklin Allen of the Hearst Papers and Edwin Norse of Brookings Institute, who was Truman's erstwhile financial advisor, and Bishop McIntyre of Los Angeles. Keep these names confidential for the present, please. When we were allowed to enter the restricted section, after about 6 hours in which we were checked out on every possible item, event, incident, and aspect of our personal and public lives, I had the distinct feeling that the world had come to an end with fantastic realism. For I have never seen so many human beings in a state of complete collapse and confusion as they realized that their own world had indeed ended with such finality as to beggar description. The reality of other plane aeroforms is now and forever removed from the realms of speculation and made a rather painful part of the consciousness of every responsible scientific and political group. During my 2 days' visit, I saw 5 separate and distinct types of aircraft being studied and handled by our Air Force officials, with the assistance and permission of the Ethereans. I have no words to express my reaction. It has finally happened. It is now a matter of history. President Eisenhower, as you may already know, was spirited over to Muroc one night during his visit to Palm Springs recently, and it is my conviction that he will ignore the terrific conflict between the various authorities and go directly to the people via radio and television, if the impasse continues much longer. From what I could gather, an official statement to the country is being prepared for delivery about the middle of May. We know that no such announcement was ever made. The Silence Control Group won the day. We also know that 2 more ships, for which we can find no witnesses, either landed sometime after the 3 or were already at the base before the 3 landed. Gerald Light specifically states that 5 ships were present and were undergoing study by the Air Force. His metaphysical experience is evident in that he calls the entities Ethereans. Gerald Light capitalized Ethereans, calling attention to the fact that these beings might have been viewed as gods by Mr. Light. The alien emblem was known as the trilateral insignia and was displayed on the craft and worn on the alien uniforms. Both of these landings and the second meeting were filmed. These films exist today. The treaty stated that the aliens would not interfere in our affairs and we would not interfere in theirs. We would keep their presence on Earth a secret. They would furnish us with advanced technology and would help us in our technological development. They would not make any treaty with any other Earth nation. They could abduct humans on a limited and periodic basis for the purpose of medical examination and monitoring of our development, with the stipulation that the humans would not be harmed, would be returned to their point of abduction, would have no memory of the event, and that the alien nation would furnish Majesty 12 with a list of all human contacts and abductees on a regularly scheduled basis. It was agreed that each nation would receive the ambassador of the other for as long as the treaty remained in force. It was further agreed that the alien nation and the United States would exchange 16 personnel with the purpose of learning of each other. The alien guests would remain on Earth. The human guests would travel to the alien point of origin for a specified period of time, then return, at which point a reverse exchange would be made. A reenactment of this event was dramatized in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. A tip-off to who works for whom can be determined by the fact that Dr. J. Allen Hynek served as the technical advisor for the film. I noticed that the top-secret report containing the official version of the truth of the alien question, entitled Project Grudge, which I read while in the Navy, was co-authored by Lieutenant Colonel Friend and Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who was cited as a Central Intelligence Agency asset attached to Project Grudge. Dr. Hynek, the one who debunked many legitimate UFO incidents when he functioned as the scientific member of the very public Project Blue Book. Dr. Hynek is the man responsible for the infamous, "It was only swamp gas," statement. It was agreed that bases would be constructed underground for the use of the alien nation and that two bases would be constructed for the joint use of the alien nation and the United States government. Exchange of technology would take place in the jointly occupied bases. These alien bases would be constructed under Indian reservations in the Four Corners area of Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona, and one would be constructed in an area known as Dreamland. Dreamland was built in the Mojave Desert near or in a place called Yucca. I cannot remember if it was Yucca Valley, Yucca Flat, or Yucca Proving Ground, but Yucca Valley is what I always seem to want to say. More UFO sightings and incidents occur in the Mojave Desert of California than any other place in the world. So many, in fact, that no one even bothers to make reports. Anyone who ventures into the desert to talk to the residents will be astounded by the frequency of activity and with the degree of acceptance demonstrated by those who have come to regard UFOs as normal. According to the documents that I read, all alien areas are under complete control of the Naval Department. All personnel who work in these complexes receive their checks from the Navy through a subcontractor. The checks never make reference to the government or the Navy. Construction of the bases began immediately, but progress was slow. Large amounts of money were made available in 1957. Work continued on the Yellow Book. Project Red Light was formed, and experimentation in test-flying alien craft was begun in earnest. A super top-secret facility was built at Groom Lake in Nevada in the midst of the weapons test range. It was codenamed Area 51. The installation was placed under the Department of the Navy, and all personnel required a Q clearance as well as executive approval. This is ironic due to the fact that the President of the United States does not have clearance to visit this site. The alien base and exchange of technology actually took place in an area codenamed Dreamland above ground, and the underground portion was dubbed the Dark Side of the Moon. According to the documentation that I read, at least 600 alien beings actually resided full-time at this site, along with an unknown number of scientists and CIA personnel. Due to the fear of implantation, only certain people were allowed to interface with the alien beings, and those personnel were and are watched and monitored continuously. The Army was tasked to form a super-secret organization to furnish security for the alien task projects. This organization became the National Reconnaissance Organization, based at Fort Carson, Colorado. The specific teams trained to secure the projects were called Delta. Lieutenant Colonel James Bogreitz was a Delta Force commander. A second project, codenamed Snowbird, was promulgated to explain away any sightings of the red light crafts as being Air Force experiments. The Snowbird crafts were manufactured using conventional technology and were flown for the press on several occasions. Project Snowbird was also used to debunk legitimate public sightings of alien craft. Project Snowbird was very successful, and reports from the public declined steadily until recent years. A multi-million dollar secret fund was organized and kept by the military office of the White House. This fund was used to build over 75 deep underground facilities. Presidents who asked were told the fund was used to build deep underground shelters for the president in case of war. Only a few were built for the president. Millions of dollars were used to build top-secret alien bases as well as top-secret dumb, deep underground military bases. President Johnson used this fund to build a movie theater and pave the road on his ranch. He had no idea of its true purpose. The secret White House Underground Construction Fund was set up in 1957 by President Eisenhower. The funding was obtained from Congress under the guise of construction and maintenance of secret sites where the president could be taken in case of military attack, presidential emergency sites. The sites are literally holes in the ground deep enough to withstand a nuclear blast and are outfitted with state-of-the-art communications equipment. To date, there are more than 75 sites spread around the country which were built using the money from this fund. The Atomic Energy Commission has built at least an additional 22 underground sites. The location and everything to do with these sites were and are considered and treated as top secret. The money was and is in control of the military office of the White House and was and is laundered through so circuitous a web that even the most knowledgeable spy or accountant cannot follow it. By secret executive memorandum NSC 5510, Eisenhower had preceded NSC 5412/1 to establish a permanent committee, to be known as Majesty 12, to oversee and conduct all covert activities concerned with the alien question. There were 19 members of Majesty 12. The first rule of Majesty 12 was that no order could be given and no action could be taken without a majority vote of 12 in favor, thus Majority 12. Orders issued by Majesty 12 became known as Majority 12 Directives. This group was made up over the years of the top officers and directors of the Council on Foreign Relations and later the Trilateral Commission. Gordon Dean, George Bush, and Zbigniew Brzezinski were among them. By 1955, it became obvious that the aliens had deceived Eisenhower and had broken the treaty. Mutilated humans were being found, along with mutilated animals, across the United States. It was suspected that the aliens were not submitting a complete list of human contacts and abductees to Majesty 12, and it was suspected that not all abductees had been returned. The Soviet Union was suspected of interfacing with them, and this proved to be true. The aliens stated that they had been and were then manipulating masses of people through secret societies, witchcraft, magic, the occult, and religion. You must understand that this claim could also be a manipulation. After several Air Force combat air engagements with alien craft, it also became apparent that our weapons were no match against them. In November 1955, NSC 5412/2 was issued, establishing a study committee to explore all factors which are involved in the making and implementing of foreign policy in the nuclear age. This was only a blanket of snow that covered the real subject of study, the alien question. By secret executive memorandum, NSC 5511 in 1954, President Eisenhower had commissioned the study group to examine all the facts, evidence, lies, and deception and discover the truth of the alien question. A major finding of the alien study was that the public could not be told. It was believed that this would most certainly lead to economic collapse, collapse of the religious structure, and national panic, which could lead into anarchy. Secrecy thus continued. An offshoot of this finding was that if the public could not be told, Congress could not be told. Funding for the projects and research would have to come from outside the government. In the meantime, money was to be obtained from the military budget and from Central Intelligence Agency confidential, non-appropriated funds. Another major finding was that the aliens were using humans and animals for a source of glandular secretions, enzymes, hormonal secretions, blood plasma, and possibly in genetic experiments. The aliens explained these actions as necessary to their survival. They stated that their genetic structure had deteriorated and that they were no longer able to reproduce. They stated that if they were unable to improve their genetic structure, their race would soon cease to exist. We looked upon their explanations with extreme suspicion. Since our weapons were literally useless against the aliens, Majesty 12 decided to continue friendly diplomatic relations until such time as we were able to develop a technology which would enable us to challenge them on a military basis. Overtures would have to be made to the Soviet Union and other nations to join forces for the survival of humanity. A symposium was held in 1957, which was attended by some of the great scientific minds then living. They reached the conclusion that by or shortly after the year 2000, the planet would self-destruct due to increased population and man's exploitation of the environment without any help from God or the aliens. By secret executive order of President Eisenhower, the Jason scholars were ordered to study this scenario and make recommendations from their findings. The Jason Society confirmed the findings of the scientists and made three recommendations called Alternatives 1, 2, and 3. Alternative 1 was to use nuclear devices to blast holes in the stratosphere from which the heat and pollution could escape into space. They would then change the human cultures from that of exploitation into cultures of environmental protection. Of the three, this was decided to be the least likely to succeed due to the inherent nature of man and the additional damage the nuclear explosions would themselves create. The existence of a hole in the ozone layer may indicate that alternative one might have been attempted. This is, however, only conjecture. Alternative 2 was to build a vast network of underground cities and tunnels in which a select representation of all cultures and occupations could survive and carry on the human race. The rest of humanity would be left to fend for themselves on the surface of the planet. We know that these facilities have been built and are ready and waiting for the chosen few to be notified. Alternative 3 was to exploit the alien and conventional technology in order for a select few to leave the Earth and establish colonies in outer space. I am not able to either confirm or deny the existence of batch consignments of human slaves, which would be used for the manual labor as a part of the plan. The moon, codenamed Adam, was the object of primary interest, followed by the planet Mars, codenamed Eve. I am now in possession of official NASA photographs of one of the moon bases. I believe that the Mars colony is also a reality. As a delaying action, all three alternatives included birth control, sterilization, and the introduction of deadly microbes to control or slow the growth of the Earth's population. AIDS is only one result of these plans. It was decided by the elite that since the population must be reduced and controlled, it would be in the best interest of the human race to rid ourselves of the undesirable elements of our society. Specific targeted populations included blacks, Hispanics, and homosexuals. The joint United States and Soviet leadership dismissed Alternative 1, but ordered work to begin on Alternatives 2 and 3 virtually at the same time. In 1959, the RAND Corporation hosted a deep underground construction symposium. In the symposium report, machines are pictured and described which could bore a tunnel 45 feet in diameter at the rate of 5 feet per hour in 1959. It also displays pictures of huge tunnels and underground vaults containing what appeared to be complex facilities and possibly even cities. It appears that the previous 5 years of all-out underground construction had made significant progress by that time. The official space program was boosted by President Kennedy in his inaugural address when he mandated that the United States put a man on the moon before the end of the decade. Although innocent in its conception, this mandate enabled those in charge to funnel vast amounts of money into black projects and conceal the real space program from the American people. A similar program in the Soviet Union served the same purpose. In fact, a joint alien, United States, and Soviet Union base existed on the moon at the very moment Kennedy spoke the words. During the United States' initial space exploration and the moon landings, every launch was accompanied by alien craft. On November 20, 1990, Los Angeles TV Channel 2 announced that a separate, red, glowing, round-shaped object accompanied the space shuttle Atlantis on its latest classified military mission. That was the first public admission. A moon base, Luna, was photographed by the lunar orbiter and filmed by the Apollo astronauts. Domes, spires, tall round structures which looked like silos, huge T-shaped mining vehicles that left stitch-like tracks in the lunar surface, and extremely large as well as small alien craft appear in the official NASA photographs. It is a joint United States and Soviet base. The space program is a farce and an unbelievable waste of money. Alternative 3 is a reality. It is not science fiction. Since our interaction with the aliens began, we have come into possession of technology beyond our wildest dreams. We currently have and fly atomic-powered anti-gravity-type craft in Nevada. Our pilots have made interplanetary voyages in these craft and have been to the Moon, Mars, and other planets. We have been lied to about the true nature of the Moon, the planets, Mars, and Venus, and the real state of technology that we possess today at this very moment. There are areas on the moon where plant life grows and even changes color with the seasons. This seasonal effect is because the moon does not, as claimed, always present the exact same side to the earth or the sun. The moon has several man-made lakes and ponds upon its surface, and clouds have been observed and filmed in its atmosphere. It possesses a gravitational field, and man can walk upon its surface without a spacesuit, breathing from an oxygen bottle after undergoing decompression, the same as any deep-sea diver. I have the official NASA photographs. Some of them were published in the books We Discovered Alien Bases on the Moon by Fred Steckling and Someone Else is on the Moon. In 1969, a confrontation broke out between the Soviets and Americans at the lunar base. The Soviets attempted to take control of the base and held American scientists and personnel hostage. We were able to restore order, but not before 66 people were killed. The Soviets were suspended from the program for a period of 2 years. A reconciliation eventually took place, and once again we began to interact. Another plan is in force. It is the plan to prepare the public for eventual confrontation with an alien race. It could also intend to make you believe in an alien race that may not exist. The public is being bombarded with movies, radio, advertising, and TV programs depicting almost every aspect of the purported true nature of an alien presence. This includes the good and the bad, look around and pay attention. Someone is planning to make their presence known, and the government is preparing you for it. They do not want any panic. The unprecedented number of sightings worldwide indicates that public exposure is not far off. Never in history have there been so many incidents involving UFOs, and never in history have there been so many official acknowledgments. For many years, the secret government has been importing drugs and selling them to the people, mainly the poor and minorities. Social welfare programs were put into place to create a dependent, non-working element in our society. The government then began to remove these programs to force people into a criminal class that did not exist in the 50s and 60s. The government encouraged the manufacture and importation of military firearms for the criminals to use. This is intended to foster a feeling of insecurity, which would lead the American people to voluntarily disarm themselves by passing laws against firearms. Using drugs and hypnosis on mental patients in a process called Orion, the CIA inculcated the desire in these people to open fire on schoolyards and thus inflame the anti-gun lobby. This plan is well underway and so far is working perfectly. The middle class is begging the government to do away with the Second Amendment. The media will convince the American people that a state of anarchy exists within the major cities. When public opinion has been won to this idea, they intend to state that a terrorist group armed with a nuclear weapon has entered the United States and that they plan to detonate this device in one of our cities. The government will then suspend the Constitution and declare martial law. The secret alien army of implanted humans and all dissidents, which translates into anyone they choose, will be rounded up and placed in the 1 mile square concentration camps which already exist. Are the people whom they intend to place in these concentration camps destined to make up the reported batch consignments of slave labor needed by the space colonies? The media, radio, TV, newspapers, and computer networks will be nationalized and seized. Anyone who resists will be taken or killed. This entire operation was rehearsed by the government and military in 1984 under the code name Rex 84 Alpha, and it went off without a hitch. When these events have transpired, the secret government and our alien takeover will be complete. Your freedom will never be returned, and you will live in slavery for the remainder of your life. You had better wake up, and you had better do it now. The conclusions are inescapable. 1. The secret power structure may believe that by our own ignorance or by divine decree, planet Earth will self-destruct sometime in the near future. These men sincerely believe that they are doing the right thing in their attempt to save the human race. It is terribly ironic that they have been forced to take as their partner an alien race which is itself engaged in a monumental struggle for survival. Many moral and legal compromises may have been made in this joint effort. These compromises were made in error and must be corrected. Those responsible should be brought to account for their actions. I can understand the fear and urgency that must have been instrumental in the decision not to tell the public. Obviously, I disagree with that decision. Throughout history, small but powerful groups of men have consistently felt that they alone were capable of deciding the fates of millions. Throughout history, they have been wrong. This great nation owes its very existence to the principles of freedom and democracy. I believe with all my heart that the United States of America cannot and will not succeed in any effort that ignores those principles. Full disclosure to the public should be made, and we should proceed to save the human race together. 2. We are being manipulated by a joint human alien power structure which will result in a one-world government and the partial enslavement of the human race. This has been deemed necessary to solve the elemental question, who will speak for planet Earth? It has been decided that man is not mature enough in his evolutionary development to be trusted to interact properly with an alien race. We already have enough trouble between the different human races, so what would happen if a totally alien extraterrestrial race was introduced? Would they be lynched, spit upon, or shot? Would discrimination result in nasty encounters that would doom humanity as a result of the aliens' obviously superior technology? Have our leaders decided to lock us in the playpen? The only way to prevent this scenario from taking place is to cause an evolutionary leap in consciousness, a paradigm shift for the entire human race. I have no idea how it can be done. But I know that it desperately needs to be done. It needs to be done very quickly and very quietly. 3. The government has been totally deceived and we are being manipulated by an alien power, which will result in the total enslavement and/or destruction of the human race. We must use any and every means available to prevent this from happening. 4. If none of this is true, something else may be happening which is beyond our ability to understand at this moment. We must force disclosure of all of the facts, discover the truth, and act upon it. The situation in which we find ourselves is due to our own actions or inactions over the last 44 years. Because it is our own fault, we are the only ones who can change future events. Education seems to me to be a major part of the solution. The remaining part is the abolition of secrecy. And 5, there is always the possibility that I was used, that the whole alien scenario is the greatest hoax in history designed to create an alien enemy from outer space in order to expedite the formation of a one-world government. I have found evidence that this could be true. Through ignorance or misplaced trust, we as a people have abdicated our role as the watchdog of our government. Our government was founded of the people, for the people, by the people. There was no mention or intent ever to abdicate our role and place our total trust in a handful of men who meet secretly to decide our fate. In fact, the structure of our government was designed to prevent that from ever happening. If we had done our jobs as citizens, we would never have reached this point. Most of us are completely ignorant as to even the most basic functions of our government. We have truly become a nation of sheep. And sheep are always eventually led to slaughter. It is time to stand up in the manner of our forefathers and walk like men. You must understand that, real or not, the purported presence of aliens have been used to neutralize certain widely different segments of the population. Don't worry, the benevolent space brothers will save you. It can also be used to fill the need for an extraterrestrial threat to justify the formation of a new world order. The aliens are eating us. The most important information that you need to determine your future actions is that this new world order calls for the destruction of the sovereignty of nations, including the United States. The new world order cannot and will not allow our Constitution to continue to exist. The new world order will be a totalitarian socialist system. We will be slaves shackled to a cashless system of economic control. If the documentation that I viewed while I was in Naval Intelligence is true, then what you have just heard is probably closer to the truth than anything ever spoken. If extraterrestrials are a hoax, then what you just heard is exactly what the Illuminati wants you to believe. I can assure you, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that even if aliens are not real, the technology is real. Anti-gravity craft exist, and human pilots fly them. I and millions of others have seen them. They are metal. They are machines. They come in different sizes and shapes. They are obviously, intelligently guided.
Now, here is an interview with author William Cooper.
So, Mr. Cooper, are there larger numbers of people all the time who are receptive to your message and who are thinking a little bit more deeply and critically about these fundamental issues of government and politics that perhaps they did not give as much thought to in the past?
Oh, yes. In fact, I never dreamed that I would make such an impact. When I first began what I'm doing now, which was many years ago, I was lucky if I could travel 1,000 miles and collect 3 people in somebody's living room, none of whom, by the way, would help me pay for expenses or anything else, to sit down and listen to what I had to say. And I did this many times, travel all the way across the country, just to talk to 2 or 3 or 4 people in somebody's home and put all the expenses myself. And now I can go to someplace like the Salt Dome in Salt Lake City and fill the place up with people who want to come and hear what I have to say. I think the radio broadcast has had a lot to do with it. My book has certainly been the number one underground book in the country for the last 8 or 9 years, and continues to be today. And I know that I'm really hitting the mark, and I'm really making people pay attention. When the president of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton, names me in a White House memo, which Rush Limbaugh read on the air, as being the most dangerous radio host in America. To me, that was the most tremendous compliment that I could ever receive. It was worth more than $50 million, in my estimation. And if I don't ever do anything more than what I've accomplished, I certainly have accomplished quite a bit in the way of waking up the average American to stop believing everything that he's told or taught and start questioning and using his own mind for something other than to hold up the top of his head. And I think that's happening. I think people are beginning to question and think and arrive at their own conclusions today a lot more than they ever have in history. Trusting people is what got us in this situation. And the concept, the whole concept that imperfect man can rule other imperfect men and it's going to turn out all right is the most ludicrous proposition that I've ever heard in my life.
I think there are a number of people that agree with what you say who are aware of some of these facts. Again, the question to ask is, given that there may be ills and abuses on the part of the government today, what would be something that a person interested in seeing change could do? What sort of advice would you give somebody who wanted to have an effect for the better, who would want to influence events so that we would begin moving towards a change?
There are only 2 possible avenues of change at the present time. One is civil war, which we are heading toward right now. We are rushing toward a civil war in this country. And I foresee that is probably the most reasonable expectation that we can see happening. Not that I want it to happen. Not that a civil war is reasonable. But it's the reasonable conclusion after looking at the whole picture. The other is that we could somehow really educate the vast majority of what I call the American sheeple. These are people who are ignorant.
Ignorant is not a bad word. It just means that they're without knowledge. If we could educate them and get them to understand that it is more important to stand up now and take a personal risk and educate other people and say that this has all got to stop and be able to select our own candidates and make sure they get elected no matter what the press or the television or anybody else tells us about them. Put them in office, people who will support, protect, and defend the Constitution like the liars and the charlatans who are in office now swear to do when they take their oath of office, but don't at all. Don't even attempt it, in fact. If you could get the people to do that, then there might be a possibility of a political, peaceful solution. But I can tell you right there that that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in your wildest dreams, because most people spend the first 21 years of their life trying to get away from daddy and get away from home and become responsible and have their own responsibility in life. They spend the rest of their life, once they find out what that really means, in trying to find a daddy that will take care of them and take all the risk away from them and make sure that they have a job and that their diapers are changed and they have a bed to sleep in at night and a place to play and all of that kind of stuff, just like every other child in the world. And to stand up and be responsible and take a risk means that they're not going to find that. That's why socialism is so attractive to the vast majority of any people, not just Americans, but any people. It promises that they're going to have a daddy again who's going to take care of them. If they'll just give up all their rights and all their liberties, daddy will take care of them. And so that's what people are looking for. And you can see it in your daily life. That's the way they vote. That's what they want. They don't want to take personal responsibility. They don't want to take a risk. They're afraid of getting on a list. I've had people tell me to my face, Bill, I know all about this stuff, but I can't help you because I don't want to get on anybody's list.
Is it different anywhere else then, Bill? Because this question brings me to something I wanted to ask you anyway, and that is, in looking over other countries in the world, do you find any other countries with social or political models, even if it's only some aspect of their system, that you find worth emulating in other countries? Any other country or countries that you think go about the political process or the social contract, if you will, in a way superior to the United States?
No, I don't, as a matter of fact. Up until we began to take this left turn into socialism, the United States was the great light of the world, so to speak. We were the only free people who had ever existed in the entire history of humanity. We like to talk about our great heritage from England. The English were never free. They're not free today. They don't have freedom of speech. They don't have any of the freedoms that we've always had and cherished. In the history of the whole human race, the only people that have ever lived on this planet who have ever truly been free, the ultimate achievement of all humankind was to accept the individual as a king or queen in his or her own right, being responsible and having all of the freedom and liberties that they could possibly imagine right here in this country. And we created a government that was supposed to have a balance of power and was limited, strictly limited by the Constitution, and only given a very few powers in order to protect the freedom of the common man. That's all gone now. I mean, that's like a big, you hear these politicians in Washington today talking about how the Constitution is an outdated document penned over 200 years ago by a bunch of doddering old men who did not understand the complexities of the modern age. They won't tell you what you should already know, is that the document is not an outdated old document. It is a living Constitution. It has within it the means for change should the people desire that it be changed. But the people don't desire that, so they just go ahead and throw it in the trash can anyway and go about their business doing anything that they want to do. while Joe Blow on the street doesn't even know that it's happening because he's never read the document that guarantees his freedom in his whole life.
So, Mr. Cooper, given the controversial nature of so many of the things that you have studied with regard to government and the law and the abuses thereof, tell us a little bit about how it has affected your personal life. You're a family man with two children. What kind of impact has the work you've done had on your family?
Well, that's quite an interesting question that doesn't get asked very much, but it's had a tremendous effect. If you want to find out how quickly society can turn against one, and I'm talking seriously here, stand up and tell the truth about just anything that you want to stand up and tell the truth about. It scares the living daylights out of everyone. And so the first thing that happens is you find out who your friends are and who your friends are not, because there's a great weeding out there. And it's not anything that you do on your part or that I've done on my part. They just disappear. And you find very quickly that people are afraid to be around you because that they can see the government being upset about what you're talking about, and they can see repercussions coming, and of course they have happened and will continue to happen. And ultimately, I really believe that there will be some kind of a terminal point where they decide that they're not just not going to put up with this pest anymore, and that's going to be the end of me. We have been literally financially in the ditch. We have found it impossible to get any kind of a normal job with anyone who knows anything about what I do. It's you can't go to church, you can't go to cocktail parties because everybody else is sitting around talking about the weather or, oh, what school did you go to? And when you have done the research and arrived at some of the answers that I know to be true now, those people become like kindergarten children. They're not in the real world. And I can't engage in that kind of a conversation. So you really find yourself in another world that has nothing to do with all of the rest of the people who are running around engaged in their activities that they think are so important then. And to them, they really are. But to me, they've lost the reality of what really is important, and they're about to lose their freedom to even discover those things at this point.
May I ask you a last question, and that is, how would you like to be seen or remembered in future years when people look back and you think about the thrust of your work? What is it that you would like to be best remembered for?
I think I would like to be remembered like Paul Revere was remembered. At a time when it was needed and nobody else would do it, I got on my horse and rode through the night and said, the British are coming. And this time it's not the British, although there's an element of the British here, because England is a socialist country. I'm sure you know that. That's all. I'm not looking for any fame or any fortune. You certainly don't get rich doing what I'm doing. And infamous is probably the real word that describes what happens to you as far as public recognition in a world where political correctness is the theme of the day. You just don't do what I'm doing. So if anybody wants to remember me, I would certainly be pleased if they just remembered I did what was the responsible and the right thing to do at a time when nobody else had the guts to do it.
Well, Cooper, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.